closer. Other musky rod is trash. Every other musky rod sucks ass. You can slay a dragon. You can be a king. Buy a musky shop shield rod, or I'll kick you in your beans.
God, buddy. All right, folks. Welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. What are you doing, Guru?
Dude, I have been in and out of lectures on a beanbag.
In a beanbag from home.
It's great.
You got the remote learning going on, eh?
It's all remote the time.
It is. The world is now remote. You know, in the past, we used to do podcasts in people's living rooms, and now it's remote. You know, we would travel the country doing this in people's living rooms. So, and now everything's remote. The podcast is now remote. School's remote. Everything's remote. But anyway,
I feel alone.
I loved your heavy metal ode to the Musky Shop shield rods, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I put in weeks worth of effort for that one.
That is going to be on the Tyler Andrews and the Bottom Raiders Greatest Hits Volume 1. I have a feeling that ranks up there with Muskies or Douchebags. You know, there's some just stellar hits.
We're working on it. We're working on our first album.
Yeah. What's the other hits you guys have? Hard Grinding. That's another. Power Bottom Trolling. What else?
Kiss Me Like a Sucker.
Kiss Me Like a Sucker. Wanna See My Pounder, he said. Wanna See My Pounder. There's another hit song from Tyler Andrews in the Bottom Raiders. Anyway, this is the one and only podcast episode ever brought to you by Musky Shop Shield Rods, because after all this dumb stuff, they're going to come and take them away. Me and Tyler made a change for the better.
Yes.
We've made a change. Two Musky Shop Shield Series rods. They are from the Musky Shop, and they are badass.
Oh, they're just killer. They're beautiful.
Anyway, we just got these. These just showed up at the shop. I am now, this is what I'm throwing. This is what Tyler is throwing. The rest of this stuff is right in the back shelf. It's retired. C'est la vie to the other rods. And the reason being is because these rods are like 9-foot models. They're telescoping. They're $169 a piece, which is, you could buy like three of them for the price of other rods. But anyway, I at least wanted to bring that up, and that's what me and Tyler were laughing about the song. These are killer rods, I promise you. We've been throwing them. They just got them in. If you're looking for a new rod, shameless plug, kill me, whatever. They're really good. I've been a fan of telescoping rods for a little bit anyway. And so
I love them, man. I never used to have any telescoping rods, and my rods are always in the way. I mean, I can fit this in my little tiny rod locker, and it's out of the way, gone, out of sight. It's great. I mean, I can get around the boat easy. It's perfect.
So they break down, if you're curious, if you have any curiosity about how small they get. They could get down to about 7 inches, or 7 inches. These rods get down to about, you can put it in your pocket and carry it to work, folks. It's the Musky Shop Pocket Musky Fisherman Rod. Now, they actually get down to 7.5. So you've got a 9-footer that's collapsing down to 7.5. When the telescoping rods first came out, people were sort of leery of them. I've had no problem with them. Tyler, many have fished many a times with some of the different brands of telescoping rods that have been out there, because me and you both have the same thing. We don't have that 10-foot rod locker.
No, like, no. Even if you do, they're not very good for musky rods.
The rods keep getting bigger, but the rod lockers get bigger like 3 years too late. Like, every boat's like, we got an 8-foot 6 rod locker. Well, everybody's fishing 9-footers now. You know, what's, yeah. when will it end? But anyway,
it never ends.
No, we did want to talk about them because a lot of people, one thing that people ask on the podcast, what rods do you throw? What rods do you recommend? We recommend the Muskie Shop Shield series of rods. No, I mean, I'm not just being corny about it. Me and Tyler would not get behind something if we didn't believe in it and we didn't like them. It took a while for us to get to this point. We tested them out. Those are the rods, man. The Shield series rods, they offer a 9-foot heavy and a 9-foot extra heavy, which are phenomenal. Full court grips on those guys. They have some other options in their Shield series stuff, but this is what me and the guru are throwing, are the 9-foot heavies, 9-foot extra heavies, which brings up one thing I wanted to gab to you about, man, because it's like, got a lot of ground to cover. I just got off the boat. You just got out of school. You actually went fishing after school because you're insane. So we both got off the water here is we're getting into fall, and we got a lot of questions this week at the app and the podcast about gearing up for fall. And the thing that comes up is rods. Number one, what rods do I hang meat with? You know, what rods do I hang, do this? So to answer a lot of those questions, that's what me and you are just going to sort of cover, which is you can hang a sucker on just about any rod there is, though.
I don't think there really is a special sucker rod. I mean, maybe there is out there somewhere in there's musky ethos.
Well, there, you know, it's just like one of the, not to bring it back to the Shield series of rods, but they have an 8-foot trolling and live bait rod, which is like a good 8-foot versatile rod for your trolling setup, or you could hang a sucker off of it. But I don't think it really, I wouldn't hang a sucker off a medium.
No, I mean, I've hung suckers off of every single type of musky rod that I've owned.
Right.
They all work.
It can be done. Just, I want to make sure if I'm working multiple live baits, that's a different thing. But if I'm working one, I'm probably going to put it on like a heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now, am I going to go out of my way to have specified like six? I don't ever run 6 live baits, but say somebody's wanting to run a bunch of live bait or something. You know, I would not go and run my medium heavies or lighter rods if I have the choice. Because a lot of that with the quick strike rig is to really be able to just hammer it home and hammer it home fast. That's the only comment I would have. And we've just gotten so many questions this week because people are starting to think cold water period, pre-ice up, hanging meat, and trolling. That's the other thing is you and I both trolled these Shield Series rods this week as well.
They're great.
And so I was trolling. I trolled a headlock on the 8-footer. I trolled a 14-inch Jake on the 9-footer, which is I'm using as a casting rod now, and they held up exceptionally well.
I trolled an anchor. I mean, they can hold anything.
Anchor, yeah. Out on Green Bay, you might have picked up like a human body.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Ran into a barrel of toxic sludge, didn't break. No joke. God, that's the thing these rods can hold up to it. So the big question we've gotten, this I'm trying to summarize like 15-20 questions into just this little section, is it doesn't matter what rods you use for trolling as long as the tip and the backbone of the rod can handle it. You know, again, it's the same thing with the sucker deal. I wouldn't put a headlock on my medium heavy rattle trap rod. You know,
No way.
I'm not big on matching, like, I don't care about matching tackle size when I'm casting. I'm worried about matching things up when I'm trolling more so than anything. So I know that rod can take the impact, it can take the hit and just the wear and tear. Another thing, like 3 different people asked about how to minimize rod wear on their rods when they're trolling, which is this. I've got a little secret about some heat shrink. I'll put a thing here on the app here in a few days. But a quick little tip, if you're getting into some heavier bait trolling and you don't want to tear the cork up or the EVA on your rods, is right now the secret I'll give away is just take a dish rag with you and wrap the handles in that, you know what I'm saying? Just sort of set it in the rod holder and wrap it around that the handle or the foregrip if you're getting your rods torn up from dragging big baits. You know, because if your rod holder is just sort of wearing and tearing there, then you're tearing the cork up, you're tearing the foam up, whatever you got there on the handle. If you're running into that, use like a dish rag or a piece of a t-shirt or whatever. Just put some cloth in between there and the edge. It's the simplest fix that's not like a big deal. Like I said, I've got a trick using big like tuna grade heat shrink for rods to wrap those up. But that's something we'll divulge in the future. The other thing was setting up quick strikes, Tyler.
Yes.
We got a ton of that. Let me go over. I'm going to go on. I'm still on the muskyshop.com. Shameless.
How do I hook up my meat?
How do you hook up your meat? I want to see your meat hanging off the boat. So, I give up, folks. I give up. How do you rig your meat?
How do you display your meat?
I want to see your meat on display. God.
Jeez. It's got to be pierced with hooks.
Pierce my meat. Anyway. Let me look here. Who's this butcher guy? See, I'm on here. They got the Butcher Magnum Quickset rigs from Joe Butcher Outdoors. Is that how you pronounce that guy's name, I think?
Butcher, Bucker, I don't know.
Joe Bucker, he knows how to hang. That Joe Bucker feller knows how to hang his meat, boys. Got his own meat hanging rig. Let me look here. I'm doing some research. So they got the Magnum, for your Magnum meat. If you have Magnum meat and you want to hang Magnum meat, this is the rig for you. Oh, it's falling apart early already, Tyler. So this is the Magnum Quick Strike rig. It's a large version of now classic Joe Butcher. Quick Set Sucker Rigs. That is what I use. Actually, this comes with like... Now, the debate is this. This Butcher Quick Strike rig has the front single hook.
Mm-hmm.
I don't usually do that. Do you rig up with that, Tyler? Do you use this, the little nose hook there, little mouth hook, or how are you rigging?
I mean, I've used both. I mean, sometimes with the single hooks, yeah, they work, but sometimes the muskies or the suckers can shake them a little bit.
Uh huh.
I actually cut them up and modify them a little bit. And retie the wire and kind of do my own thing with them with a triangular piece of bucktail wire, or you know that front single hook to go right on the sucker's nose. That for me always pops out. Yeah, just no matter what sucker rig, this the sucker for me always just gets off. Someone say, "Oh, you're probably not rigging it right." I know how to hook my meat. Okay.
If anybody that knows your meat, it's you.
Yeah, it's my meat. You know, I know what's going on.
You went, you purchased said meat. It's now your meat.
It's my meat, all 6 inches of it. And
do you prefer 6-inch meat or 12-inch meat? Or
I look a good 10.
I quit. I'm done. That's it. Thanks, folks. Thanks for coming on. It's the wheels have fallen off this wagon real fast. It's a whopping like 9:00. I got off the water early. And I'm already lit up, and I'm listening to this crap. The last problem we ran into is the word banana, and now we're talking. The word sucker is just as funny. I can sit here and make sucker puns all day long.
We just can't get through.
Can't get through it. It's horrible. It's immaturity run amok. Anyway.
Quick finish here.
you're known all around campus for your quick finish, aren't you?
Oh my gosh. Anyway. So I take a piece of bucktail wire, twist it up into like a triangle. There's two ends that would go in the nostrils of the sucker.
Mm-hmm.
And I stick them right in the nostril. I have the two treble hooks then, one in the top end of the sucker or the belly of the sucker, and the one near the tail.
So your tip would be poke them in the nose.
Poke them in the nose, yeah.
Poke them in the nose. They make, if you like that kind of rig, I think the Smitty, let's look here. Smitty Nose Quick Set Rigs has like, man, that's the thing. There's like every quick strike rig, everybody just does them a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Look here, because that's like a single. I like the Magnum Booker the most. Like you said, that's the tip, and me and you both do that where you make a little sort of springish triangle out of some bucktail wire. I've done it out literally out of a coat hanger one time. I didn't have any bucktail wire laying around. That's the thing, is like making that sort of the little pinchy kind of wire nose hookup deal for those suckers is a pretty good deal. The biggest thing, folks, is I try to avoid anything that has that, you know, a single barb as a hookup hook. And, you know, Pete was on here a few episodes ago talking about that. That's the big thing to avoid. You know, if you're going to make your own, make sure that you're sort of rigging it. I can't even talk today. Rigging it as safely as possible. Tyler, do you like, you know, some of these places use like a stinger hook that's heat shrinked on there, or just burying one barb into the sucker? What's sort of your MO on actually hooking the fish up, hooking the sucker up?
Where I'm placing the hooks on the fish?
Yeah, like, what, do you prefer a stinger hook on the treble, or are you actually just going to use one barb of the treble to hook the fish?
Sometimes it depends on the fish. I use both. Like, sometimes I'll get a sucker that's just batshit crazy. And you just can't control them. So I'll have, I usually use the little hooks for that. For me, they seem to stick in there a little bit better because they don't make as big of a hole in the fish.
Yeah.
If they're a little bit more docile, I'll just use the big hook. Right. I mean, it kind of boils down to how lazy I'm feeling.
Right.
And which one's closer to the, which hook barb is closer to the fish.
Well, and that's the thing, I think. I like the small little stinger hooks off the treble because it minimizes how much of the fish, of that sucker, you're putting holes in.
Yeah, because if you keep putting holes in them, then you don't really have anywhere to put.
How many times can you shoot that thing, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want that many things. But, that I mean, the only comments I think that I would have about the whole deal is make sure that you're using a quick strike, okay, obviously. If you're going to hang live bait, got to be a quick strike. Use whatever one you trust. It doesn't matter exactly what rod, as long as it's got a heavy backbone. And the other thing was about the other question that came in multiple times was about should they use a bobber or not. And that is really about conditions, though.
Yes, I use both. Also, one quick tip is make sure you guys put weights on your suckers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
good point. The leader, because they... If you don't put weights on them, you'll see your bobber up there. The sucker's going to be on the surface of the water
just
or something ridiculous.
Hey, guys.
Whatever.
Thanks.
Some suckers I've had to put like an ounce or 2 ounces on because they won't stay down.
Your new $12 pet out there swimming around. Hey, guys. Out here shimmying on the surface. You know, now that's one thing is in what I do is I take egg sinkers and pre-rig them up and just have them if you need them.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can just hit that egg sinker. Usually the best way I've found to do it is connecting it to the swivel on the sucker rig.
Yep. Do you like the quick release ones with the plastic brackets that just go right on there?
Those
the metal
will
ones?
Work. Sometimes they're just not heavy enough, so I sort of rig up some stuff. I don't like them in line of the rig though on a flow. I want them like off to the side. You know what I'm saying? Some people will put that sinker. They'll put their main line leading to the sinker and then the sucker rig below it.
Mm-hmm.
I want that sinker hanging off a part of the sucker rig, so I don't have to sort of lift it as much on the hook set. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's not.
Oh, yeah.
It's not in line. It's part of, if that, you know, it's adjacent of that main line. I guess the best way to articulate it would make sense. What else? Other meat stuff. Another guy asked, actually multiple people asked, about adding blades for attractant on sucker rigs above or below. I don't think it matters.
They sell them with blades. I've caught them with the blades, caught them without the blades. I've noticed no preference.
I don't.
It's neat, man. They want to eat it.
Yeah, I think once we've got a live bait rig out there, it's a mute point.
Yeah.
You know, that thing's out there going, hey, it's shimmying around. Don't eat me.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, we got a bunch of questions asked this. How long do you wait on a quick strike rig, you don't have to really wait until you know which way the fish is going.
Yeah.
It's a quick strike for a reason. The whole point is to not let these things turn that sucker around and eat it. Mm-hmm. So we need to be careful of that, you know, especially if it's a newer angle or something. I'm not trying to like be like, it's a quick strike for a reason, but you know, it just don't let them suck it down. I had a client this week. We were talking about sucker fishing up north, and he said he went on a guide trip in like 1960. Right?
Wow.
This is, you know, ancient history to you and I. No offense to anybody out there that's fishing during those days, but he said he went sucker fishing there in central Wisconsin in the 60s and told me that the guide told him, he said, you don't set the hook until you've had 3 cigarettes or 30 minutes have gone by.
Oh, my gosh.
I died laughing. I was like, man, you got to be kidding me, dude. That fish is in trouble with that. I mean, is he going to poop the sucker out by then?
Yeah.
I mean,
what's he going to do?
I mean, why even set the hook? Just reel. I mean, it was mind-boggling. Just a different era, you know? And he said they had a couple fish come in. He said the guy sat there and lit a cigarette, put it out, waited a couple minutes, and that was his rule of thumb. If he could smoke 3 cigarettes, it was time to set the hook. That's not what we – definitely not what we recommend
here. I mean,
here.
In the modern age, we're at about 1.5.
Yeah, about 1.5. I prefer to just, you know, just get a couple tokes there going, and then I set the hook. No, in all seriousness, the whole point of the quick strike is not waiting. Pete, like I said, when Pete was on here and we were talking fall fishing, you know, his point was get it over with. Sometimes these fish can turn that bait pretty fast.
Yeah, they can – they can suck it down pretty quick.
Yeah, so you don't want to play around with that. Anyway, moving on, Tyler. This is another one of those We're Extremely Tired podcasts. We apologize, but folks, we did have a contest last week.
A contest for the contest.
Which is just not the best contest. But the contest for this week's contest, I got a couple ones to read. Now, this guy is not the winner, okay? I'm just going to share that with you. Of anybody that did not win is this guy. Which he says, the next contest... I gave him... He said, the next contest should be who can make the best lure out of fur or the remains of their living or deceased pet.
Oh, good Lord.
What is wrong with you, Derek? What's wrong with you? Now, I won't lie. I got 2 pet ducks that live out in a little duck pond behind my house. I might have tied a fly or 2 out of feathers they've dropped. But the fact, I want to see. I want to see what he comes up with his deceased pet, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty messed up. I appreciate it, and I find it to be pretty funny, though.
I think I'll pass on that, type of bucktail.
Yeah, that's not the bucktail you want.
No.
What if you're dragging around old Fluffy there behind a set of tins? What's your little dog's name, Tyler? It'd make a good bucktail.
Little Bella.
We can put a couple tins in front of her, see what happens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, you little rig her up a little sucker rig. She'd probably catch a muskie herself.
That's awful. That is a horrific thought. Anyway, the real winner is, wow, he didn't put his name on it, but emailing. He said, hey, guys, here's my contest entry. The podcast is stupid. He says that from last week. He says, I think the next contest should be a Muskie 360 pumpkin carving contest. Said, submit a picture of your pumpkin to win a bag of hot Cheetos, a Mountain Dew, and 17 Junior Sidelines. He says, my $99 is in the mail for the submission. Last week, we were going mental there at the end being funny. So, I think it's funny. I think it is a pumpkin carving contest, Tyler.
Dude, it's pumpkin spice latte season anyway, so carve up them pumpkins.
Buddy, it is yoga pants and pumpkin spice latte season. That's what's up there. That's what I'm every this time of year gets into yoga pants and... Not for me. I'm not wearing yoga pants. I don't know about you, but...
I got pink yoga pants on right now.
I bet you do. Anyway, so here's the contest. the best Musky 360 pumpkin, right? I don't care if you carve Joe Booker's face in a pumpkin. That'd be amazing. Or you just crudely carve out Musky 360 in a pumpkin.
My mustache. Not my face. My mustache.
Just his. Well, that's rather. What is that? A straight line? What we got going?
A little crush stash.
Well, what are we going to do here? I can't give you 17 juniors in lines, but I'm going to make it dope. Five.
Whoa.
Five baits.
Whoa.
Five. Big contest
Lucky.
Here.
I'm going to carve a pumpkin.
You cannot win. It's in the fine print.
I will enter under a make-believe name that
Enrique,
I will not disclose.
Enrique Shockwave.
How did you know?
That's, you say,
gosh dang it. That's my underground name, man. Just blew my cover.
Enrique Shockwave. Anthony Weiner. It's another fake. No, that's a real guy. Anyway, carve a pumpkin. I don't care if it's just a muskie. I don't care if it's a poorly carved muskie. I don't care what it is. If it's a muskie related or Musky 360 related pumpkin.
If it's a muskie riding a black bear. I mean, it could be anything.
A black bear riding a muskie.
Yeah.
A muskie and a Catholic priest in a bar. I don't know. What's the old joke?
A muskie taking a sucker to a date or something. I don't know.
Who knows? Whatever you got. It could be like you could tell the entire story of Back to the Future on a singular pumpkin, but instead of Michael J. Fox, it's a muskie. How artistic are you? Can you convey that kind of information on a pumpkin? I don't know. But try your best. Five juniors, inlines, bucktails, ranging in, we got nines, we got eights, we got double willows, we got all kinds of stuff that's super cool. I don't care what the pumpkin is, send it. We will use it for our spooktacular Musky 360 podcast coming up in October, I'm sure. I don't know. Come up. Is it, when is pumpkin, when's Halloween? Is it September yet? It's September. Oh my God. That's how brain dead I am, Tyler. I'm that brain
it's
dead.
It's end of October, I think.
It's end of October, but I said, is it September yet? I don't have like a day off until like Thanksgiving. I'm just killing myself here. Anyway, carve a pumpkin. Get it over with. Whatever. Carve something on there. Anyway, here come the questions. We're hanging out there. Be thinking about some deeper diving cranks, maybe not superbly deep stuff, but depth raiders and I like the big Magnum shallow raiders. I like big Jakes. Just thinking transitional, thinking a little bit bigger and just focused on finding active fish. 'Cause that time of year is really a great time to find large active fish.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're getting fat and sassy.
Fat.
Want to eat your bites.
Eat the bites. All right, we're going to move on. The next one is Robert. So he says it finally happened. After 3 years of fishing hard for muskies and doing so rather safely, I had a fish bury a treble hook in my hand. How many times have you had this happen to you? Man, dude, I had...
All right, you go first, man.
The one that got me was in the wrist.
Oh.
And it was pretty gory. I'd reached down. I thought I was going to, and this is younger days of I don't need no stinking pliers, you know, just doing dumb shit. And reached down, and that thing got me in the wrist. I was just going to pop the hook out. And it quickly turned, and here I'm in the net with this fish, and it was just yanking on my wrist. It sort of went right in the crease, right where your hand and your wrist bend, and it was in there grinding around. I had another one just break a tooth off in me last year. I think it was last year or the year before. As far as getting hooked up to the fish, that's my only bad experience. I've had a couple, like, close calls. But that's mine, and it was excruciating, and it took everything I could to reach around with my left hand and try to find the pliers to cut that thing.
Oh man, that sounds awful.
Yeah, it was pretty
gosh.
Gory. You know, I was not. That ended that trip. I wasn't in a real good mood after that. Like, You know, don't, oh boys, let's put a Band-Aid on that and go fishing. Have you had one hook you, Tyler?
I've never had one hook me, but I've hooked myself a couple times just being stupid.
Yeah.
You know, where a treble hook goes right through the palm of my hand, and I got to rip it out or cut it, and it's like,
Yeah.
I try not to go to the doctor. I remove them myself.
Yeah, but, well, when you get it bad enough,
you get to go in.
I've had clients hook me. I've told those stories on the podcast before. But
hook them in the rear.
Yeah, as far as the fish, that's the one. If he got me in the wrist, you got it, man. I'll tell you. It's like... That happens to you once, and it changes how you act in the net.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen me, I'll take all day long. I don't care. I'm not in a rush. You know, my reaction speed after being hooked into, connected to a fish, hooked up to a fish there in the net, has changed immensely. You know, I if he goes swarping around there or flying around, I'm backing off and changing my plan of attack real quick. Longer, and I'll tell you the way to always avoid that is always use long needle nose pliers.
Always. I mean, even I saw at Menards, one of the hardware stores up here, they've got like a 2 foot long needle nose pliers. It's like I was contemplating getting that just for that, because it's like, if it's like a real crazy fish, I'm contemplating getting that just to be safe, because it's, I don't know, I never knew they made them that big.
That, yeah, you can get them. We don't have Menards down here. That's the dumbest name of a store. Menards. You kick me in Menards.
But what do you got down there?
We got there's Harbor Freight, which is like a discount tool place that's easy to find.
Hillbilly Depot.
We got just a cattle auction, Tyler. That's where we get our groceries. It's just a livestock auction. You know, it's just basically, this is a barren wasteland. Now, you can get like Harbor Freight, which is discount tool store, and they sell some, you know, pretty long pliers too. I still like the Booker right angle.
Oh yeah, those absolutely are great. Yeah.
They're a little pricey. They're not going to be $7 like some big pliers from Home Depot or,
I mean,
or
that,
Harbor
that
Freight. But
there's a pro tip. I mean, if there's a angler just starting out and it's like, man, I just want to get a tool for a real cheap price real quick, go to a hardware store, man.
Yeah.
I got all sorts of crap there.
Yeah, you can find some stuff. You know, muskyshop.com has the best of the best available as far as those tools. You know, but there's a lot of options available as far as having these on the boat. I'll tell you, and not to sound like a broken record, but I do not go musky fishing without the proper tools. That's like my big, I'll go without my tackle box before I go without hook cutters.
I mean, I've showed up to the boat launch and forgot my little toolbox full of tools, and yeah, then was like, I'm just going to go home. I'm not even fishing, because I'm going to catch one and I'm not going to know what the heck to do with it.
I can always, I don't care about the catch as much that I care about the hook cutters.
Mm-hmm.
I run, let me find them on here. I'm actually got their website.
The Nip-X?
The Nip-X, man. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
There is nothing, I want to tell you, big pro tip here. There is no other set of hook cutters that I will have on my boat.
We've tried a lot of them, and these ones just dominate. They're tougher than nails.
Yeah, you can cut easily, one-handed, cut the shank on a treble hook.
Oh, it's amazing.
That's the big prerequisite for me, because the time I was hooked to a fish in the net, I struggled to cut the shank of the hook. That's the big thing for me, of like, you're not going to sit there and have like a lot of time to finagle, like, oh, let me get the perfect angle. If you're actually in that scenario, you're sitting here going, wow, this hurts, I have a treble hook in my hand.
Yeah, imagine one of those, like, those big bolt cutters that takes two hands to cut the hook, and you're hooked.
Nope.
How are you going to do that? You can't do it.
Not going to do it, because it never happens when you got somebody else on the boat.
Oh, it's always when you're by yourself, like late at night, can't see. Yeah.
It's,
you need the Nip-X.
You got to get those. Musky Shop carries them. They are pricey. Okay, there's you're just gonna gulp when you see that they're like $64 a box. Get them of anything you can get. Like, don't fool with the other stuff. I've tried it all. I have, you know, because one thing I've seen when people and this, like I said, not to harp on safety or harp on it too much, I've gone out on other people's boats and they've got just some snippers that will cut the barb off of a hook. That's cute and all, but I need to be able to cut the shank of a hook.
Yeah.
That's my big thing of like, you're not going to, when I was hooked in that fish, I was like, oh, hold on, fish. Let me get the perfect angle here so I can just cut the tip of this hook off. You know, it was like, let's get this over with. The Nipex, that would be the it. You know, Daiwa 7-inch cam dike cutters. There's no jokes there, Tyler. What are you laughing at? You know, this is what I'm talking about. These are a great utility cutter, but don't confuse something like that for a safety tool that's gonna could really save you from getting messed up. Get heavy duty, one-handed, like you said. Don't get the two-handed bolt cutters.
When it comes to your safety on the boat, I mean, it's worth the money.
Well, as I'm sure as Bob can attest, it didn't feel real good when he got hooked that bad. So.
Feels like cupcakes and rainbows.
Cupcakes. And I feel like, God, I feel like I've been ran over by a tank is what I feel like. You just said that. I'm ready for bed. Next up is John. John says, based on podcast purchase. Oh, it's based on the podcast. He purchased JB's Crankbait Secrets, the Bible itself. Ooh. The sacred text, if you're a Star Wars fan. The sacred text. I like that ethereal music. Can you keep it going the entire time I answer, Tyler?
You want me to?
No. He says, under the topwater finesse, JB talks about limiting action of topwater with initial pauses for bass, and then doing a subtle initial slight nudge to trigger a strike. Does this work for muskies as well? What he's talking about in the Crankbait Secrets is talking about the finesse end of topwater fishing, the finesse end in bass fishing, and some different things you can do just with pausing topwaters and then starting and stopping them. It will work. One thing that I've seen work a lot of the time on like walk the dog baits, whether it be like a jackpot or a weagle or a dancing raider, you know, you can almost pause those things in their own wake to trigger strikes. That's what I'm thinking about on musky stuff. I'm really not huge on like dead stop and plop baits, like tail props or anything.
I've tried that, and they always go like, what the heck? And then just swim away. I've never had one take it when I stop it in front.
With that being said, now a creeper, different ball game. It depends on the bait style. So like, walk the dogs, you can sort of get them to not stop dead, but sort of get to bounce in their own wake, right? That can make some things happen. Some creepers, you can really stop them or pause them. That happens to work a lot of times. You know, I'm trying to think of any other real finesse. But the thing for me is when I'm thinking muskies and topwater, I'm not thinking extreme finesse too often. A lot of times that's a bludgeoning thing. But again, it depends on where you're at. It's just something you got to play with, because there's certain places I know that if I stop a top raider, the fish aren't going to hit it. You know, it's like as bad as stopping your blades on a bucktail. But
it's like, you know, fast moving baits. I mean, stop them just dead. It's kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're bringing a fish on something fast and it just goes complete opposite dead.
Yeah.
You're like, what the heck?
Yeah. So, you know, think about that. It's really for me, I'm trying to wrap my head around this thing, but it's really about knowing how to read their demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're like me and you'll fish top waters year round in some cold water situations over some shallow stuff, sometimes stopping them is the game. But in general, for muskies, I do not like to dead stop a top water. It seems to work a lot better for bass. But it's read your water, John. That's going to be the thing. If the fish are coming in real sluggish and they're real funky and they're real odd, you know, that might be the time. Anyway, the next one is Pat. He says, loving the podcast. He says, my thoughts for a contest. He says, this is funny. He said, let's see how many baits you can put in a large box and then send it to me.
How large a box are we talking about? Like 2 inches by 2 inches?
You know, how many baits could you? How about an empty box?
Yeah.
Maybe he just wants that. Anyway, you know, maybe someday. We'll see. We should do, Tyler. We should do a mass. I'll think about it. It'll be a while.
A big, crazy contest where someone gets a ton of baits.
I got a ton of baits that I'll give away. We should do that, like a full tackle box. But it's going to have to be a good contest.
Have to think about that contest.
Yeah, we'll think about that one.
Like, give me $1,000, you know.
Not at all. It'll be like a scavenger hunt or something ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
I like that.
Pat's real question, he says he has an 18-foot Crestliner with a 150 Mercury OptiMax. He says he's been considering purchasing a 9.9 kicker for trolling. He said, last year I installed a trolling plate, which slows me down to about 1.4 miles per hour, but reverse sucks now. I've heard that when trolling with a large motor, it gives off so much more noise and vibration that it can deter some fish. What are your thoughts? Spend more money on a kicker or keep what I have and save the money for Pepsi and musky baits?
I've never used a trolling plate before.
Here's my thing. He's asking more so about if he gets a smaller motor, will it be a quieter, less spooky kind of deal? If it's an issue and we're talking about 1.4, use your trolling motor.
Yeah, I mean,
when I troll sub two,
go super slow.
Well, that's the thing is, if I'm trolling, it depends on your boat's weight and how much thrust you have on your trolling motor. When I troll like in the 1 to 1.5, 1.8, 1.9 even, I can use my trolling motor. And it's really does the job, but that's also about how proportionate my boat is, you know, in weight to the thrust I have on my trolling motor. I have seen it when it is like, I'm talking like spooky, calm and flat. I will use the trolling motor to drag baits. I don't think that. Again, you know, if we're getting so particular, if the fish is not going to hit because you're trolling at the same speed on a slower motor or on a different motor, I don't think that fish is going to be catchable. I could be wrong, but I mean, it's one of those things of how spooky of a fish are you fishing for? The thing that would get me, and I'm just thinking out loud here, is if they're that spooky and they're that motor shy, it doesn't matter what motor you're on. I would be using planer boards and getting the planers away from the boat.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're going to spook no matter what.
Yeah.
And you just get them away from the boat. Don't straight line them.
Well, and that's the thing. So if it's super spooky and you need to go slow, I wouldn't. I think a 9.9 is going to make enough racket that it's going to matter. I would rather, if I'm slow trolling, I'd rather be on the trolling motor because it's going to be quieter. And if they're that spooky, I don't know if between the big motor and a small kicker motor, if it's going to make that much of a difference. My solution would be really good planer boards and a really good trolling motor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's one of those deals of, If your boat will handle it as is and you're already getting down to the speed you need, I know the trolling plate can suck for reverse and stuff, but I don't know if I would shell. I mean, we're talking, you know, 9.9 can cost you thousands of bucks.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know if it's going to put that many more fish in the boat, opposed to if they're that dang spooky using the troller or using planers. I've ran into that in really calm stuff where I will use the trolling motor and I will put my planer boards out there a good distance. You know, and maybe I'm trying to troll one edge or one weed line. Well, I might have two planer boards on one side of the boat going just to get that distance off those weeds so I'm not sort of trudging over the fish before the baits get there. So that would be my thought. Me personally, I'm a curmudgeon. I wouldn't, if your boat will troll and you're hitting the speeds you need, I wouldn't pony up for the money. What do you think, Tyler? Is he overthinking it? Like, hey, you know,
I think you're overthinking. I've ran a kicker before. I don't have one now. It's just, some kickers are loud, man. I mean, they're going to be loud. They're noisier than a trolling motor.
Well, my thought, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's much louder. Much louder. And it's one of these deals of the kicker is running to run at the same speed as running at a higher RPM.
Yeah. So it's going to be loud.
I mean, I
would just go straight trolling motor, man. It's quieter, and you know what? You can go super slow with trolling motor.
Yeah, that would be my thought. I mean, if they're that persnickety,
yeah,
you know, if they're that tough to get, and if they're that spooky, the kicker's going to be just as bad. The the other option is row troll your 18-foot Crestliner. Get you some big orb or Tom Gelb style. You know, that, I mean, I get what he's saying because it's such a thought process I think we all go through. Sometimes they are spooky. Sometimes there are. I don't think I would dump $8,000-$9,000 worth of spooky into another motor. Next up is James. He says, I know you've got I know you get a lot of rod and reel questions, but this is a little different and I would love your feedback. I fish mainly from the shore or in waders. I've done well my first season with a 7-foot Bulldog spinning rod. I'd love to upgrade to something a little bit longer. Spinning gear for muskies is limited. Should I learn to throw a bait caster? What are the benefits? I typically throw lures in the 2 to 6 ounce range. He said, any rod or reel ideas for guys with no boat? $400 budget, and I can drive to the muskie shop if you throw some ideas my way. Let's look here.
What are you thinking, Steve? Do you like, I mean.
Oh, what do you know, Steve?
Hey, don't you know, Steve?
I am looking here at the Busky Shop Shield Series spinning rod, right? So they've got an 8'6" spinning rod. I have 8'6" spinning rods on the boat for my clients, and these are excellent. We throw a lot of spinning rod stuff during different times of the year. And I don't mind to throw a spinning rod for muskies. I don't think it's any, there's not like some, oh, I fish with a bait caster, therefore I am better, you know. Exactly. I actually find that jigging's much better with a spinning rod, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Put your Bondi bait on that thing and report back to me. It the feel of that, jigging that bait up and down on a spinning rod's way better. So I use spinning rods for jigging. I have clients that are not great with bait casters, you know, because as a guide, you take people of all skill levels. And I have guys that are not great with bait casters that catch fish on spinning gear all the time. The thing for me is just having a good quality rod, just like any other thing. I don't think you need to switch up your game and go, oh, I have to have a bait caster. Now, it opens up the world of musky rods far more for you by learning to throw a bait caster. But, you know, I can work a glide bait on a spinning rod. Throw bucktails. I've done it enough with clients and just had to learn how to do it and pulling stuff in. You can throw any bait style with a spinning rod, so there's no big benefit there. As far as what rod I would be looking at, is check out the spinning rods that the Muskie Shop offers, because that's about the best bang for the buck you're going to get for like a quality custom rod, and it be a spinning rod in the muskie game. You know, I mean, Tyler, have you thrown much spinning?
I got one in the boat in case, like, one of my relatives wants to come out and they don't know how to use a bait caster. I kind of, that's the only reason I use it. I mean, if I'm, it's the springtime and I'm jigging for muskies. I mean,
the one thing is this, I'm looking here, you've got the Akuma, they have a spinning combo at the muskie shop for $189,
ooh,
which is an 8-footer. See what else, make sure. And you know, you get into your St. Croix. St. Croix has some stuff here, but they're only getting up to the 7. And to me, it's
the Muskie Shop spinning rods go up to 8.6.
That's what I'm saying. You got it. You can get an 8.6, which is right now the industry standard on how big a muskie rod should be able to do an effective figure eight to really work the baits these sizes. I'll tell you, you know, he was asking about lure size, weight, and matching the rod. Forget about that stuff, folks. If you're sitting around worrying about matching lure weight to the rod, forget about it. Get something else to worry about.
We've seen each other throw all sorts of baits on one rod. From like a little rattle trap to the massive pounder.
It doesn't matter. I'll tell you, flat out, I run a heavy rod. So I've got my new wonderful Muskie Shop Shield Rod, 9-footer, that I'm so extremely in love with. But, you know, the first day out, do you know what I did with that thing, Tyler? I know you did the same thing. I have a Monster Megadosa, and I have, like, the Super Pounder Double Tail, right?
Yep.
I took those, and I took a JB Rattler. Those are the first baits I threw on the heavy series rod.
I love it.
See what it can do. Can you throw? If it can throw a rattle trap and it can throw a Megadusa, okay, cool.
Perfect rod.
There you go. Moving on. I can throw anything in between that on that rod. So that's really my thought process with rods. I look at medium heavy rods. Any rod that's not just a heavy rod is sort of specified tools. And I don't need any of those in my game. I don't know why. Maybe somebody can give me some amazing answer. But
I've been in boats where there's like 18 musky rods.
Yep.
In between the cockpit and on the front deck. It's like, whoa.
Well, I'll tell you, the thing is this, is like me and you have done it when we fish with JB, right? Booker had got his shoulder messed up fighting that Tyson muskie that pulled him down on the boat and stuff. And, you know, Joe fishes a bunch of different rods, but he fishes lighter stuff, and he's a little bit better about matching his stuff up.
Yeah, you know, yeah. If that happens like that, it helps to match it up.
Right.
A little bit easier on you.
Me and you that are just goobers out there that can huck all day.
Oh, we could take a beating.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you don't have to really mamby-pamby about things, throw a heavy rod. Me and Jay were talking about that on the phone, the Jay from the Muskie Shop, about they get asked a lot about the rod weight and what they'll handle, right? Once you get to a heavy rod, it can pretty much handle about anything.
When I'm muskie fishing, I have never had the thought of, can my rod handle this lure, ever come into my head. I just don't think about it. I just do it.
And just eliminate it from your thought process and just go for the rod that's going to suit you. Even here, I'm looking at their spinning rods. All of them are heavy or extra heavy. But I would recommend, if I was going to go for one, is they have the 8.6 heavy fast action. That would be my squirrel. That would be the one I would go for. You know, that's well under your budget, and that would be a rod that I think is going to last you for years. And it's a very quality rod, and you can throw whatever you want on it. You know, they have an extra heavy, too, if you're worried about, especially with spinning rods, and we're sort of talking in circles on it. Spinning rods do have a different kind of backbone. And so sort of feel that rod tip and play with it a little bit and go, okay, can this handle the heave of a bigger bait? That's the only thing I would say. I'm going to give away a super secret here, by the way, Tyler.
Ooh.
Super secret. Do you want to have them for a bunch of spinning rods, by the way?
What have you done, Steve?
I take those 8'6" bulldog predator rods, and I cut the trigger off of them and make them spinning rods, and they're awesome. That's the one I use for a spinning rod. It is, and some people are probably going, "Oh, that's disgusting." It works great, and so that's like my jigging rod. And I just took a, I cut the trigger off with a hacksaw, and then I took a file and rounded that the hump over where it was and smoothed it out. And it's like the best spinning rod I've ever owned for just $99.
That's amazing.
And so, you know, depends on how cheap you want to get with it, but it's 8'6" spinning rod. That is my jigging rod. It's wicked, and it worked great. You know, whatever. Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, the muskies don't seem to care. I'm sure somebody's like, "Well, that's not it. The backbone of that rod is not intended to be." But the rod is the. Hey, well, tell it to the fish I catch on it. Who cares?
So, yeah.
But that's a little hack I've done. Anyway, Ron says, shad is the primary forage in my Ohio reservoirs. The rule of thumb seems to be to follow the shad to find the muskies throughout the season. I've started noticing shad in the form of bait balls in the back of creek arms lately. What draws the shad to the back of the creek arms during the fall? Can you summarize where shad are throughout the season? When do they spawn? Where do they spawn?
Go ahead, Shad Daddy.
Shad Daddy. Shad Daddy, Shad Daddy is not a story we're going to tell here on the podcast, Tyler, but it's a good one. Use your imagination, folks, and just imagine a guy that goes by the name of Shad Daddy. The deal with this is everybody of water is going to be different on when they spawn and where they spawn. Shad are always following warm water. Most of the time, that's why they're in the back of those creek arms, because it's slightly warmer. When they spawn, it can differ wildly based on these different bodies of water. Let me do this. I'm going to do a quick temperature look up here. Spawning temperature.
Me, Google at me.
So, they're saying, and I just want to make sure, I thought it was a little bit cooler than this. See, the reason being is I've seen anecdotal spawning activity below this, but the general rule of thumb is 64 to 69 degrees, right? And so, it can be over the map. You know, this says gizzard shad can begin spawning in mid-April and continue through May. There's just going to be a spread there. There's something to be said, though. Like, the thread fins are going to be a little bit warmer, where it might be 67 to 70, somewhere in that neighborhood. But I have seen secondary shad spawns take place. And so what you want to look for is different temperature gradients. I know that if you have wildly fluctuating temperatures, that it can spawn, it can sort of trigger multiple spawns throughout the year, because shad are prolific. You know, you can have hundreds of thousands of these critters in one body of water. So it's hard for me to tell you exactly what they're going to do in your body of water. But using that temperature as a basic rule of thumb, so as the temperatures are rising from the winter, once we get into that creeping into, see this, like I said, the traditional info is saying 64. Once it starts creeping up to the high 50s is when I'm going to be paying attention, right? So it could be from 59 to 69 degrees. That's a big wild window there of time, and so, you know, as far as how long it takes to warm things up. The one thing I've noticed with shad, when we're talking Ohio, when we're talking these different reservoirs, they like to be shallow most of the time anyway, even when they're open water, you know, because shad are pelagic, they can go offshore and hang out and all this stuff. So the general, and I'm just generalizing because this could go on for hours about what's going on with shed. Look for warm water. When they're spawning, it's pretty much guaranteed muskies are going to be around when you can find that shed spawn. It's usually just a murder fiesta, you know, when there's, I mean, it's, dude, I've seen them. I remember pulling up on the boat one time and like, I hadn't even made a cast that day. I go to pick up the rod, right? And there's a mid 40s just jumped 5 feet off the boat and got me wet. He just, I didn't even made a cast. He was just like, he was just coming through on a tear. You'll see them. If you can find where the shad are spawning, you'll see multiple muskies in there just launching through the air with a shad in their mouth, just tearing them up. So watch for that. You know, where they spend their time throughout the season is going to be different on every body of water. So that you're just going to have to follow that. The best thing I can tell you is watch their movements on a regular basis. You know, if you know they're shallow now, follow them out, try to keep track of what they're doing and really study their movements on your particular body of water. Last question. Kent says, regular old fly fisherman from Colorado, what size fly rod and reel would you recommend for musky fishing? I like a 10 weight.
I run 10 weight too.
That's what I run. I am not a big fan of throwing the funky chickens. You've heard me say that, Tyler, before. Yeah. I don't like throwing the big flies. It's sort of counterintuitive as I'm using it for a throwback or a downsized presentation. 10 weight gets it done for me. My setup is a 10 weight with a 10 weight reel, and I throw 10 weight Rio intermediate. And the biggest thing I can tell you for musky fishing is make sure you got loop ends. You know, don't get crazy like trying to do some weird Skagit rig or some, you know. Just get some either floating or intermediate. I like intermediate because I'm usually fishing at depth. But loop-in Rio seems to be the best. I think all the Rio is loop-in, but I'm just throwing that out there. Don't try to, like, affix some crazy shooting head or anything. That's the biggest thing is, like, multiple-piece lines when you're throwing these flies. So I'm throwing a 10-weight. 10 weight intermediate. I'm throwing bugs that are no more than about 7 or 8 inches. I'm not interested in throwing big flies. If I need to move a muskie, I've got bucktails and gliders and all kinds of stuff to move them with, you know. I'm often using this as a way to come back on top of these fish that wouldn't strike and get them to eat. And so that's what I use fly fishing for. If you're going to use this as your primary, that's the only thing you're going to do, you might need to look at a 12 weight, which is going to be heavy. You know, it's a heavy enough rod to really get some of those big flies moving and turn them over. But man, I'll tell you what, it's a workout. Me and you have done it, Tyler, where you're throwing these big flies and like 4 hours in, you feel like you fish 16 hours.
Oh, you feel like death.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. I like the 10 weight. It's one of these things like musky fishing on the fly as people are starting to look at it. I've been doing it for years and it's like nobody really pays attention to it. It's finally starting to blossom a little bit. People are getting interested. I'll tell you, be ready for punishment. If you think it's hard, musky fishing is hard, now do this crap. But if you're smart about it, fish like a normal musky fisherman and keep a fly rod on the boat, and it becomes another tactic in your arsenal. Trying to just start out from ground zero, and we are musky fishing solo with a fly rod is awful. I do it all the time with clients. Some people do not want to throw conventional gear, and it is a grinder, man. It's a grinder. You got to land it right on their nose. But that would be my comments there. Tyler, I have to get ready for another illustrious day on the water tomorrow. We got a special guest coming up next week. It is hard for us to schedule guests around my stupid guide schedule, but we will get it done. That's another one in the bag, Tyler.
Yeah, yo.
Yeah.
Talk to y'all later.
Later, folks.
Every other musky rod is trash. Every other musky rod sucks ass.